why do we stay loyal and continue to cheer for teams which year after year break our hearts? In sports world, loyalty to our teams or our team is an unwavering truth. In this episode of The Vertical View, I'll chat with my good friend Kirk, who is a loyal Cleveland Browns fan. I've often wondered, and today I'll ask him, why do you keep cheering for the Browns? Maybe it's nostalgia. Maybe his family has always followed the Browns. Maybe it's because of geography. Maybe he lived in Ohio or near Cleveland. Maybe. But maybe Kirk believes in the phrase, there's always next year. I know, as a lifelong Cubs fan, this phrase was one that was used to make fun of me, usually just after the start of a new season. Friends, well, I guess you could call them that. Friends would say, the Cubs have been mathematically eliminated, and there's always next year. Well, whatever it is, we will get to the bottom of it as we talk to Kirk, the Cleveland Browns fan. So if you're ready, I know I am, let's get vertical. Welcome back to The Vertical View. As I said in the intro, we are asking the question, why do we stay loyal or cheer year after year for that team or that organization who is a perennial loser, or at the very least, why they just can't seem to get out of their own way? Joining me in this discussion is my longtime friend, Mr. Kirk Kettinger. Kirk, welcome in.
Good to be here.
Yeah, man, I know, and I just want to thank you for your willingness to chat about this topic. And we've already had some discussions about it, and so it's going to be interesting to hear what kind of comes out today. I want to start here. You and I go way back, but your fandom of the Browns goes back further. So let's just get right into it. Why in the world are you a Browns fan?
It's a complicated question. And a perennial loser, while it might be true, still hurts every time I hear it. So thanks a lot for that. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
But it's probably mostly because of family connections, to be honest, which I think are the reason why we like a lot of things in life. I lived in Ohio as a kid from the time I was 4 until the time I was 10. My dad's from Cleveland, so we spent time going to Cleveland to watch baseball games and an empty stadium, watching the Indians, who were not very good at that time. But there were a lot of trips to Cleveland, and we were familiar with the area. And even though we moved to Seattle, Washington when I was 10, that connection to Ohio was still there. And, you know, going back in the summers to visit family, and on a football level, we've always been Ohio State fans. As a kid in Columbus, you know, we went to Ohio State games, and I can remember going to parades, and I remember meeting Woody Hayes at a Bob Evans on a Saturday morning.
Yes, Bob Evans.
I know, good stuff. But I didn't really know who he was, but my dad took my brother and myself over to talk to him, and he was sitting at the counter that they used to have when you walked in, and very nice guy, signed our kids' menus, and just had a good conversation. I can remember that, and just, you know, Ohio State's always been part of our DNA. But yeah, grew up liking teams initially based on their helmets, and then in logos, like I think a lot of kids do. And then became a Cowboys fan.
Ooh.
I know. I was cured of that disease. But it took a few years. And, you know, I was trying to think about it as, you know, trying to think about it for today's podcast. And I can remember 82 in the catch. And my brother and I had gotten in a fight. And my mom had made us turn the television off. And we heard that on the radio. And we heard, you know, Dwight Clark catch the game-winning touchdown. And that was kind of depressing. And then we moved from Seattle to Rochester, and I started to watch more Browns games, probably partially because we were back on the East Coast.
Right.
And I just started to get more interested. And so for a while I had two favorite teams, the Browns and the Cowboys. And then Bernie Kosar started coming along, and we started, you know, really getting more interested. And it was really around, you know, 1986, 87, when I started to switch allegiances, and that was when it happened, just in time for the drive. So good timing. I had the catch, then the drive, then the fumble.
Oh, and we're going to get there. Yeah, we're going to get there.
I'm a glutton for punishment.
So I want to go back to two things. So the first one being, do you think that you would have become a Cleveland Browns fan if it wasn't for kind of the geographic places that you initially grew up? And in, even within that, was your dad a Browns fan? And so was geographic and family both reasons why you went?
It's probably both, but it's probably more the connection with football and my dad.
Okay.
And what he would watch and what he would talk about, because while we lived in Columbus and in Ohio, you know, when I was younger, it's not like, for me, that's not emotionally home.
Okay.
For me. And so, you know, I assume I might've become a Bills fan, which, again, no offense to my Bills friends, but in the '80s, that would have probably been an even worse fate.
yes. Wide right.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I think it was the fact that my dad loved the Browns. He talked about growing up watching the Browns in the '50s and the '60s when the Browns were the best team. They were the Patriots,
right,
of the NFL. Even, you know, and then they didn't quite make it to the Super Bowl after the merger, but they were a factor. And, you know, he went to high school. He actually graduated from a high school in Warren, Ohio, and he went to high school with Paul Warfield, who's a Hall of Famer. Cool. And a Browns wide receiver. So, you know, there are all these connections, all these little things. And then they were good right about the time that I started to get interested in the NFL. I used to be a big NBA fan. And then, I don't know, the NFL just caught my attention and imagination. And I became a rabid Browns fan right around the mid-'80s.
Okay, so then my second part of that of the question, or actually the second question out of that, would be, you made mention that you became interested in the NFL helmets. So it begs the question, how do you fall in love with the Cleveland Browns helmet?
True. Yeah. No, it's the whole ensemble. It's not just the helmet.
Okay.
You gotta, like,
so break that down a little.
Uniform. If I was just being completely objective, I'd probably pick the Raiders as having the best.
Oh, silver and black
uniform. Yeah. It's just so simple and pure and amazing, and I love their helmet.
Yes,
with the single black stripe, and, you know, it's just a great uniform. The Browns are similar in a sense, because they're very simple and they're traditional. And now that they got rid of those older, those uniforms they had for a few years at the beginning of this year, and they have those new kind of uniforms, I think they're really, I think they look great. Now, my wife, who's from Pittsburgh and poisons half of our house with her love of the Steelers, she thinks they look bad and they need something on their helmet. But I do like the simplicity of it. You can see that reflected at Ohio State with their helmets.
Sure.
I hear that they might come out with a throwback uniform to celebrate one of their significant years next year. And I'm hoping for the one that has the numbers on the helmet, which,
yes,
they did do. And they've had that throwback uniform before. So, but I love the helmet. I love the orange. I love the simplicity of it. I'm not one of those people that would never want to consider a logo, but I'm fine with it the way it is.
So you kind of put me on the logo thing. And I've got it pulled up here, but it's a depiction of Brownie Elf.
And Elfie. Elf.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that. Has this logo or this depiction of what was called the primary mascot, was that ever on the helmet?
No. I think they've had, like, if you go back, to the really early years when they were winning championships, they had a white helmet, I believe, with a single stripe down the middle. And then, you know, they had the years with the great Jim Brown, who I got to actually stand next to one time at the NFL Football Hall of Fame, which was a really great moment. My son was there, who's a Browns fan, so that was fun. But they, I think it was during his era that they might have had for a year or whatever, the year that they had the helmets with the numbers on it. But
yeah,
but it's but they've never had a logo, just the number. And even that was, I think, for just a year or two. So, yeah, that's just part of their tradition, like Penn State and other places.
Notre Dame.
Just keep it simple, keep it traditional, and remember your heritage. So
there's something classic and just genuine about it. I agree with that. I've become more and more drawn to that over the years. So let's transition into, you talked about your son and that he's now a Browns fan. What has it been like over the last number of years as you've shared that with your family? So your dad, your brother, and others, but then transition that into now, what's it like to be a Browns fan with your son and your kids?
It was a lot more fun this year than it's ever been before.
That's true.
Well, I'll tell you that much. Yeah, Jared is, you know, he's in his early 20s, and he would go through, he's a really, really big sports fan, especially the NFL. In fact, our whole family is. We all watch football games together, college and NFL, and my daughter is into football, and she's a Steeler fan. So it's a split house. But Jared has only, up until this year, experienced mostly frustration, anger, all Browns fans go through. And so this year, it was just really exciting to be able to have a season that reminded me of the 80s when I first started watching the Browns, where they were a dominant team and where they won consistently and where they went to the playoffs and they battled to go to the Super Bowl. Especially in the late 80s, and then to see them get good again under Belichick and have that season back, I think it was 94-95, where they won 11 games and went to the playoffs and beat the Patriots. And
that's always good.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was just great. And then even the next year, 95, I was able to go to a game in Cleveland against the Chiefs where they crushed the Chiefs. And I looked the score up. It was 35-17, and I can still remember Marcus Allen on the big screen, the Jumbotron, looking dejected, and how good that made me feel.
Okay, so let's dive into that a little more. You said that Jared has really been through the down times of the Browns until this year. Yeah. So, and you know I'm a Cubs fan, and so I understand what it's like to have cheered for a team basically my whole life until recently, where we were actually good enough to be in the World Series against your Indians and win it.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Right? And so I get it. Yeah. And I've loved the lovable losers since I can remember. So, and I know how people have jeered me for that. Right? So what's it like to be a Browns fan, especially with your wife being a Steelers fan?
Right. Yeah, it's not been fun, to be honest. Now, fortunately, you know, Michelle and Megan, they don't gloat, and they've actually been very excited when the Browns have won because they know how excited Jared and I get.
Yeah.
But it's been hard because, you know, it's like, how long can you live off the past? How long can you live off of Otto Graham and Jim Brown and Bernie Kosar? Not very long before, you know, Jared's like, every year, why do I pick this team? Why do I follow the team? I'm never going to, you know, because every year they would like tease us, and or else it'd just be awful, like the year they didn't win any games.
Right.
But, you know, there were years where you felt like, oh, they're turning it around, and then they just couldn't maintain it or sustain it. And so, you know, Jared and I would live for the draft every year and get excited at preseason, and if they won a few games in the preseason, think that might translate over into the regular season, and it really never did. And it was really that inconsistency and, you know, just the false hope of people like Johnny Manziel and other especially quarterbacks that they would bring in, and either they were unable to cultivate the talent, to draw the talent out, or they just had picked really awful quarterbacks. They weren't necessarily that bad, but, you know, like Whedon, you just go back to the
number of guys.
People. Yeah. And you thought, oh, this is the guy, you know, he'll be the one that'll turn it around. And he just never did. And I, you know, so it was hard. It was hard for Jared. So this year, you know, finally having a good coaching staff, consistency throughout the organization from the general manager on down. And finally, I think having people who are really focused on the same goal and working together. It was so nice to see. And even beyond the winning, it was just nice to see an organization that looked like they knew what they were doing and had a bright future ahead of them. So I think for Browns fans, at least for Jared and for me, that's the most exciting part, is knowing that the future looks bright and it looks real this time.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the things we talked about in the opener, was that sometimes it was just the hope that this was going to be the year. And like you said, is for so many years it wasn't. Right. And so you broke it down excellent. Like, you went to the draft and like that was like the Super Bowl for you as a Browns fan.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And so to get a year like this, it kind of feels like bittersweet. Like, we made it, even though you're hoping that this isn't the end again.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice not to be thinking about the draft. It's nice to be drafting near the end of the draft and to feel like you have the foundation for future success already on the roster and people who know what to do with that talent. Because how many times, this is another infuriating thing about having been a Browns fan for the last 20 years, is that you see players come into Cleveland, get drafted, come into Cleveland and not do well, and then go to other teams and have good careers.
Yeah.
Or you see people like Joe Hayden, and I understand why they got rid of Joe, because it was part of that whole teardown process, but you know, people go on and just have great success, and it hurts even more that it was with the Steelers. But to go and do well other places, when you think, well, why couldn't they do that in Cleveland? And so some of those systemic issues seem to have been addressed, which is a relief.
And that's an interesting statement, because not only were they being moved on by administration or coaching staff or whatever, but now you're seeing, and players just wanted to move. So they would just leave. They're like, I'm out of here. I don't want to play for the Browns, whatever. Well, now you're seeing one of the biggest names on the free agent market in a JJ Watt, who's saying, I would consider the Browns.
Yeah.
Like, in your lifetime, when have you ever heard a big free agent like that say, I would like to play for the Browns?
It seems like the pattern was more that you'd have these agents or decent free agents who would come to the Browns to get a lot of money.
Yes.
But their heart wasn't in it. And then they never really amounted to much in Cleveland.
Correct.
And so to have someone, like you say, like J.J. Watt, who's looking at Cleveland because of culture, because of potential to win a Super Bowl, because they have the right quarterback, because of all the things you look for in a good team, is really exciting, because the Browns can be strategic and picky about who they bring in. They can choose to bring in only people who want to be there. And I think that in terms of culture, you know, I think they have a team that was really united this year, even in spite of COVID, in spite of not having a preseason, all these different things that happened to them, they overcame. And I think that they now believe in their ability in a way that they never would have had they not had to overcome those things over the past few years. And I think, honestly, they're in a much better position now than they would have been had they had a good year with Freddie Kitchens. And nothing against Freddie Kitchens. It's just that they were, you know, they've gone, you know, if they'd had that quick success after Baker Mayfield's first year, I don't think that solid as I think they are now for the future. I think they needed to have that really disappointing year where they struggled, even though they had the talent, in order to come back and be rebuilt this year into what I think will be a sustainable winning team.
So let's talk about being the fan. And just like the organization has kind of ebbed and flowed, you've got lifelong fans like yourself. And, you know, I was telling you about some of my friends down here in South Carolina who are Browns fans. It's just been their whole life. Kind of talk to me about what it feels like, or how do you stay with them? You've talked a little bit about it, but just as a lifelonger, what's it like to have worked through all of that and to be in this moment now? Is it like the elite, or now you just have more that you want?
I don't know. That's a complicated question. I mean, it's hard to know why you stay with a bad team for so long. And part of it's, you know, there's a community around the Browns. And even though I'm not like, you know, a Browns backer, I don't go to, you know, different clubs or online events or anything like that. I, you know, there is just this kind of like fraternity because you've all gone through the same struggles
yes.
together. And then there's this superstitious part of you that thinks the second I switch to a different team, they're going to get good.
Right.
And then I'll just look like an idiot. And I can't have that.
Right.
So, you know, there's a little of that. But I, you know, it's really, it's one of those weird things about sports. I mean, like, why are sports important at all? I mean, who cares, really? It's just a game.
Right.
But that team and how they perform on the field against other teams from other cities is almost like a proxy battle.
Yep. Yep.
For, you know, who's got the better city, who's got the better community, who's got better people, who's got, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
So I definitely have an affinity for Cleveland, and we've spent a lot of time there. Like I said, as a kid, going to especially baseball games, but I've taken my kids there, and we've been to a couple preseason games down there, U2 concerts there at the stadium. So Cleveland, from a family history perspective, is an important city and one that I have a strong affinity for, even though I've never lived there. So that's probably one of the reasons why I stayed a Browns fan, but I want more. I'm excited for the future. I want a Super Bowl. I want to see them win that and get that curse off of the city. It was great when the Cavaliers won a few years back, but this would be
huge.
I mean, it's a football city, let's be honest.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And Cleveland rocks, you know, just throwing that in there.
It does.
So,
yeah.
Last question, and I'm going to throw some trivia at you. All right?
All right.
So before I ask you the question, one of the signs that I saw as I was doing some research, and it was a picture of a sign that since 1964. And I think most Browns fans would really resonate with that sign.
Well, definitely since 99.
All right, so I want three of your best memories as a Browns fan.
Three of my best memories. Okay. So the first memory that always comes to mind is when Eric Metcalf ran back. I don't remember. Was it a punt or a kickoff return for a touchdown against the Steelers to beat the Steelers back in 93? And I got so excited. I actually jumped up and started yelling. I think Michelle wondered what in the world was happening, and the watch band on my watch snapped off. I was so tense and jumping up and down so much, and my watches flew across the room. But that was like that's one of the memories that, you know, I just so happy to win that game, so happy to beat the Steelers, and it was such a dramatic event. And you know, Metcalf was so exciting to watch.
Yeah.
And so that's one. I would say, you know, there haven't been that many great memories lately. And the two that stand out are when Baker Mayfield came in against the Jets on that nationally televised game a couple years ago and broke the losing streak.
You know,
he came in after Tyrod Taylor got injured, and he came in and was on fire. And it was, you know, it was that moment when not only were you happy about the win, but you kind of felt like maybe they picked the right quarterback. You know, maybe this could be
finally.
More. And yeah, finally. And to do it at home in front of the Cleveland fans and all that kind of stuff was so exciting. Jared and I were really, really happy about that. And then I think probably to win that game this year when Coach Stefanski wasn't even able to be there or involved in the coaching because he had COVID, and to go and win that game against the Steelers and, you know, get into the playoffs was just incredible. And so I think that's probably the other event that stands out to me.
Those are some good ones, and there are tons more, and you've kind of highlighted them as we've talked. But I want to get into maybe eight or so trivia questions. All right, and we'll see how you do.
We'll see how good I am at that.
Yeah. All right. You ready? Here we go.
Okay.
Number one. Who was the team's head coach at the time of going 0-16 in 2017?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Who was the team's head coach when the Browns went 0-16 in 2017?
That was Hugh
Jackson. All right, one for one. And Hugh was an amazing 1-31 overall, or 1-31.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they celebrate that on January 31st. To be honest, I think you'll see that on the internet as you go online.
Oh, my word. All right, number two. When was the last time the Browns had a winning record? Not this year.
Last time they had a winning record, not this year. I think it was the year they almost went to the playoffs with. Let's see, it would have been 2000.
You're right so far.
2012?
Seven.
Oh, sorry. The dates, I'm getting to that age. All the dates like run together.
But that I'll was give you
they
that
had
one.
The they had that Anderson was a quarterback, I think, and they needed to beat
Derek Cincinnati. Anderson, I believe.
Yeah, Cincinnati, the final game of the year. They had to win that game and he threw like four interceptions.
He was clutch.
So way to go, dude.
All right, who did the Browns take with their first draft pick in 1999? And I picked this because
Tim Couch.
Yeah, I picked it because you lived in Kentucky for a little while.
Tim All Couch, right. Man, he could have been great had they had an offensive line, but he got destroyed.
What Browns player fumbled just before scoring what may have been the winning TD in 1987, the AFC Championship game?
I think it was Beiner, wasn't
You're right, Ernest Beiner.
Yeah, Beiner and Mack.
Later went on to be what was then the Washington Redskins running back. One of my favorite players.
Yeah.
All right, who was the team named after?
They were named after Coach Brown.
Very good.
Paul Brown.
Very good.
From Ohio State, and then went on to start the Bengals.
Very good. And do you know what high school he coached at?
Massillon?
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. I had cousins who went to Massillon High School in Canton.
Very good. Who did the Browns play in their yearly Battle of Ohio? You just said it.
That would be Cincinnati.
Yeah, you just said it. What university did the 1957 draft pick, Jim Brown, attend?
Syracuse University.
You got it. Who was the owner of the Browns that signed the deal to move the team to Baltimore?
Art Modell, one of the most hated people in the city of Cleveland and maybe the entire state.
Well, I'll give you that. In the first Monday Night Football game ever played, the Browns were one of the teams.
Yep.
Who was the other?
They played the Joe Namath-led New York Jets.
Man, you're killing it. Do you know the score of the game? This is bonus points.
You know, I watched it during the pandemic because it was on ESPN. I think it was a relatively close game. I think it was like 17-21 or something like that, right?
You get the 21 right. It was 31-21.
Oh, so the Browns won by more than I thought.
Yeah.
I was amazed at the quickness of the game and, you know, Joe Namath's arm and the quarterback for the Browns. I don't remember his name, but he was slinging it, man. It didn't feel like an old-time game watching it from back in the 70s.
I actually didn't know the Browns and the Jets were the first Monday night game, so that was kind of cool to find out.
Nobody wanted to do it. Nobody wanted – for some reason, no one thought – they thought the ratings would be low, and my understanding is that Art Modell reached out and said, we'll do it. I mean, for as much as people dislike Modell, he was – cutting edge in a lot of ways, I think, as an owner in the NFL. And, you know, he brought in Jim Brown and helped really start to break down the color barrier in the NFL and did some good things. But, he thought it could be a good thing. And I think they had like 10,000 people outside the stadium who wanted to come in and watch the game who weren't even able to get in because it was a sold out game.
Yeah. Well, they probably watched it on their phone. They probably streamed it.
Yeah, probably. You know, they had those little things, those tubes that had the mirrors in it, so you could look over.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was there.
Yeah.
Last question. What Browns player was nicknamed the Wizard of Oz?
The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
Ozzie.
There you go.
A great tight end who went on to be an amazing GM with Baltimore.
Yeah, and actually inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1999 and played for Alabama. Didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't know where he went to college.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. Well, Kirk, this has been great. And I think we just kind of touched the tip of the iceberg with the conversation. And what I hope it does is for all those people out there who are following a team or an organization where they just are like, what in the world are we doing? I hope this gives them a little bit to think about, to stick with it, just like you have with the Browns.
I just have to correct one thing I said. I mixed up the games. You know, it's not often that we get to beat the Steelers, and I can't remember ever beating them 2 weeks in a row, but I think Coach Stefanski missed the AFC wildcard game against the Steelers, not the game to get into the wildcard game, which was the game that they played in Cleveland the week before. So I'm sure that any Browns fan out there listening to this would pick up on my mistake. So I have to try to make amends to the Browns Nation.
I appreciate that. Just like in PTI, we always want to admit our errors. So good job.
You're welcome.
Good job. Well, Kirk, thanks for being on The Vertical View.
Hey, it's been my pleasure. A lot of fun and always great to talk.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of The Vertical View. I want to thank my good friend, Mr. Kirk Kettinger, for his enlightening conversation regarding the Cleveland Browns and why he continues to be loyal to his team. To learn more about Kirk or to connect, look him up on Twitter. You can find him at KWEKETTINGER. That's at KWE Kettinger. Or find him online at www.roberts.edu. He serves Roberts Wesleyan College as the Director of Alumni and External Relations. Again, thanks to Kirk. For The Vertical View, thanks for listening. And we'd ask you to subscribe. You can find us on any platform where you get your podcasts. To follow me, look me up on Twitter. You can find me at @VE_executive. That's at @VE_executive. Until next time, I'll see you right back here at The Vertical View.